Y empezamos con Sara Safavi. Sara es ingeniera en la empresa americana Planet, una empresa que opera con sus propios satélites para ofrecer servicios en numerosos ámbitos de aplicación. Su trabajo en Planet consiste en crear herramientas para sacar provecho de las imágenes de satélites, así que nos puede hablar y mucho sobre las oportunidades que se dibujan alrededor de los microsatélites. Sara es además una apasionada del mundo open, del código de Python, y ha sido reconocida por la comunidad internacional del Phosphor-G como la desarrolladora más innovadora en 2017. Ha venido desde Texas, o sea que muchas gracias, Sara, por dejarte convencer. Many thanks, Sara, for being here, so whenever you want, it's your turn.
Okay, great. So can everyone hear me okay? Great, wonderful. Thank you all so much for inviting me to come here. I was so excited to have a chance to come to this event because I've heard so much about it. I was saying earlier this morning that a couple years ago at a local geospatial conference where I'm from in Texas, USA, somebody mentioned Jornadas Sig Libre at that event. So it's become so popular that we're talking about it in Austin, Texas. So my name is Sarah, and I'm a software engineer with a geospatial background working at a company called Planet Labs. Today I want to talk a little bit about the tiny satellites that we build at Planet Labs, and maybe talk a little bit about changing the world. But let's get started with a definition. So as geospatial people, we frequently use the phrase Earth observation. We might be talking about remote sensing or aerial photography or LIDAR or any number of things. All of these things fall under the broad umbrella of Earth observation, which is just collecting data about the Earth from a distance. So I'm starting with this definition because this is what I want us to all keep in our heads for the next few minutes. So let's look at an Earth observation system. This is from about the early 1900s. This is an Earth observation system that was collecting aerial imagery in 1914. You can see at the front, it has a sensor. And at the back, that's the aircraft that carries the sensor around. So this is real. And it was collecting data that looked like this. This Earth observation data was used during the First World War. Automatic cameras were attached to aircraft, like the one on the previous slide, and they would collect aerial reconnaissance data for information. Besides being adorable, what I find so interesting about stories like those pigeons is how they represent how passionate we humans have always been about observing our planet and collecting data about our planet. For example, this guy, he's in a hot air balloon. There's a camera attached to the front of the basket, a large camera. He has a paper map on a board in front of him. He's equipped with a pair of binoculars so he can look at the ground and see where he is on the map. And he's collecting aerial photography and using the map to mark where the photos were taken so that the imagery can be georeferenced later. And this was the late 1800s, but this is geospatial data collection from balloon. I like to say that, excuse me, since we invented the camera, we humans have looked for ways to capture snapshots of our planet from far away. And I'd like to say that there's more to that than just vanity. I'd like to think that this innate interest of ours to continue capturing data about our planet comes from a desire to learn about and to change and improve this planet that we live on. At Planet, we like to say that you can't fix what you can't see. So let's go forward a little bit, beyond hot air balloons, beyond pigeons. This is the very first picture taken of our planet from space, which I thought was really interesting. I learned about it just a few months ago. This was 1946. It was basically the 1946 equivalent of taking a GoPro camera and tying it to a rocket and launching it and hoping for the best. And it worked. They took a video camera and they tied it to a rocket that was being launched for a rocket test, hoped that the camera would collect some data, and it did. So this is the very first time humans were able to see our planet from space. And it completely shifted our perspectives. It was a paradigm shift. For the first time, we could see pictures of our planet from an orbital or suborbital distance. And we could see things like global weather patterns and clouds moving across entire continents. And this picture, in a way, made the Earth a little bit smaller for the people that lived on the Earth. So let's zoom forward again. Now we're in 2014. Now we've caught up to why I'm here today. In 2014, almost 7 decades after that very first photo was taken, this launch put 28 tiny satellites into orbit around the Earth, and that was the beginning of Planet Labs' mission and satellite constellation. That was what we call Flock 1. How many of you are familiar with Planet Labs? Great. So those of you who are familiar have probably heard about our Dove satellites. But for the rest of you who have not heard of them, when I say we build and launch tiny satellites, I mean they're quite tiny. They are about the size of a corgi dog, maybe 12 kilograms. And if you're familiar with the Landsat satellite, this is not to scale, of course, but this gives you an idea of how much smaller the Planet Labs Doves are to a regular satellite. And the advantage to this, of course, is that it is much faster to build them, much easier to build them than building something large like that Landsat. So we can build many of them on a relatively short time frame. And we call them Doves because they fly in flocks, like Flock 1. So today there's about 130 Doves actively in orbit around the Earth. That varies. It could be 150 or 140. That number changes. We've launched over 300 of them. And the reason it varies is some of them have already reached the end of their lifespans and they've been retired since 2014 when we first made that first launch. Or some of them have just been launched. We launch multiple times a year. I can't remember when the most recent was, but I think it was April. So April we launched even more. So the number shifts quite often. But we have this network of tiny satellites working together, about 130 of them. And what they do is they orbit the Earth. This is definitely not a real photo, it's an artistic rendering. But they orbit the Earth in a sun-synchronous orbit, capturing the entire Earth's landmass every single day. And this is what I'm so excited about. These satellites will capture the entire Earth every 24 hours at 3-meter resolution with multispectral sensors. That's over 250 million square kilometers every 24 hours. It's the largest Earth observation data gathering attempt ever done. And it's the largest satellite constellation ever created. Planet has built the largest satellite constellation, whether built by private industry, government, public, ever created. This is the largest satellite constellation. But that's great. We built this satellite constellation. We have the largest one in the world. We're collecting this data every 24 hours. Where do we go from here? So we have a giant, never-before-seen data set, larger than any Earth observation data set ever invented. It's growing every single day, 250 million square kilometers being added every 24 hours. What exactly do we do with it? How do we successfully take that data set, make it useful, and drink from that fire hose of data that is constantly flowing in? It's time to zoom out. Take a step back. Just like we've moved forward from pigeon photography to strapping cameras on test rockets and hoping for the best, to launching 28 tiny satellites at once and starting the world's largest satellite constellation. It's time to zoom out and think bigger. So Planet's overall mission is to image the whole world every day, to make change visible, accessible, and actionable. Through building the largest satellite constellation in the world, we've accomplished that first part. It's done. So now it's time to work on the second part. How many of you remember seeing this XKCD comic a few years ago? Some of you. I remember it was really popular, especially right after it came out with all the geospatial people, because we were so excited to see GIS mentioned in an XKCD comic. So it was being passed around to everyone, it was being emailed, it was all over Twitter, it was our favorite thing ever. So it was a joke in 2014 when it was first published. In 2017, a new kind of joke was made on a similar topic. If any of you have seen the show Silicon Valley, they have a joke about the app they created to detect hot dog versus not hot dog. Some of you are nodding. So the idea in 2014, the joke was that you'd use a computer to check if a photo was a bird or not a bird. And it would take a research team and 5 years. And then in 2017, the joke was you could do it, but you could only detect if it was a bird or a hot dog or not. So it's a different kind of joke. But in both cases, the core the core concept of the joke is the idea of deep learning, the idea of using artificial intelligence to get some kind of meaning out of data sets. So moving forward from that, this is not a joke. This is actually a study posted just a few months ago using Planet Labs data, and I love it, and I had to include it here because part of the study is literally classifying ships or not ships, which is exactly the same as the hot dog, not hot dog joke, except we're doing it in real life. So this is taking Planet Labs data and using neural networks to classify if an object is a ship or not a ship. And if it's not a ship, we just ignore it. And this lets us take massive amounts of data and get information out of it. So ultimately, our goal is to index a fire hose of data and to make the Earth searchable by providing a deep learning powered window into petabytes and petabytes and petabytes of pixels that we're collecting about the Earth. So we want to make the Earth searchable in the same way that Google makes the internet searchable. So instead of us geo people thinking about wrangling pixels and dealing with geotiffs and file storage on disk, We just want to be able to think about questions that you can ask the data. Like, for example, how many buildings were constructed in my home city since last year at this time? Or how many planes landed at the airport in October 2018? Or how many acres of forest were illegally cut down during the last 6 months? These are the type of questions that we want people to be empowered to ask of data. But so what? It all sounds really interesting. There's funny XKCD comics. We can talk about ships, not ships. But really, like, why should we care? Who cares? So, spoiler alert. Our planet's on fire. Everything is terrible. And things are not looking good. If you zoom out and take a look at the planet, things seem to be getting worse. Things are going downhill. So what can we do? What are we here in this room at this event today supposed to do? I really love the slide about how we're geospecial people, and I was thinking about that as they were introducing the events today. I was thinking, what can we do? We're geo people. We're geospecial people. So we have a very specific set of skills, and we have a very unique experience and background, and we bring a lot of different perspectives. Let's work with what we know. So everything might be a bit terrible, and it is a bit terrible, but I think it's not too late to change the ending of this story. Let's work with what we know. So today I want to ask you, what would you do individually, you yourself, if you could see daily change of anything visible on the surface of our planet? How would you take that question, take the answers to that question, take that information, and use it? So my goal is to help empower people like you, people like me, people like all of us in this room around the world to ask these questions and make the answers to those questions a reality. So I'm optimistic about our future. It feels like we're in a slow motion train wreck right now. The train has definitely jumped the tracks, but I think that as humans, and specifically we geo people as part of that group of humans, I think we have the ability to affect real change on our shared planet. And I want to share that optimism that I have with you. So, in the close of my talk here, in the next few slides, I want to share with you examples of how people like you and me are making use of Earth observation data today to actually change the world in significantly meaningful ways. There are people using daily Earth observation data right now to do things like make the invisible visible, to shine lights onto hidden and dark things, to respond to disasters wherever they might strike around the world, to do groundbreaking science that when I was in college, too many years ago, we won't say how many, we never could have thought of this kind of science being done, to fight climate change, which is burning up our planet, and to conserve natural resources that are disappearing every single day. All of these things, people are using Earth observation data and geospatial skills to change. So here, I'm just going to give you some examples of what people are doing today. You probably are familiar with this story. In Myanmar, there's a genocide taking place today. The Rohingya people are being displaced on a massive, massive scale. They are they're being genocided and they're being displaced, and the forces responsible for the crisis would like to deny that it's happening. But the thing is, when you have direct visibility into an otherwise invisible people like this group of Rohingya people, it's very hard to deny something is happening when the entire world can see it with their eyes. If you go to that URL at the bottom, and don't worry, I'll share all this after, you'll see a story that Reuters did using this imagery, including the imagery I've put here, showing, in this case, the explosive expansion of one single refugee camp over the course of 2 months. And by showing the expansion of that camp and how quickly it grew, and being able to visually estimate how many people were displaced into this camp over a certain period of time, they were able to do a very thorough investigative story that you can read there, which changed the discussion in late 2017, early 2018 of this issue in the public eye. Another thing we can do with Earth observation data is enforce transparency. I don't know if any of you saw this photo. It went around Twitter just a few weeks ago. It was very popular. This is an incident where North Korea conducted a missile test, I think it was May 3rd, May 4th. And the timing of it just so happened to coincide with the exact moment that a Dove satellite flew over and captured its one photo of the area that day. So the timing was perfect to show exactly where the missile launched from, what time it launched, what type it was. And it was visible to literally anybody who was looking at this data. It was first, I think, picked up by, yes, the Middlebury Institute of International Studies. You can go online, they have more information about it. You can read more at that link. And the data is Creative Commons licensed, so you can take a closer look at it yourself. This is another incident just a few weeks prior to that. Also North Korea, this is also Creative Commons data. And what it's showing is, this is not a missile launch, but what this is a uranium enrichment facility. And something that I think is really great about data that's available on a broad scale like this is, maybe we can't put people on the ground as inspectors to visit these facilities, but we can still see them and determine what's happening. Because the entire world has access to this, again, it changes conversations, it changes trajectories, and it changes what might otherwise be said. So moving on a little bit, I talked about disaster. So around the world today, when disasters strike anywhere, first responders on the ground react. That's what they do. And since 2000, international space agencies have worked together to share data with these first responders through something called the International Charter on Space Disasters. So last year, Planet and the Doves became a part of this charter. And so what happens is a disaster occurs anywhere on Earth. First responders on the ground in that location can request data. And anybody who's a part of this charter, including Planet, if they have data, their job is to provide it as quickly as possible. And so what we do this, basically. We supply Earth observation data, and because it's a very high temporal cadence, every 24 hours, oftentimes it's within a few hours of some disaster occurring. And this data is used in all different ways. So just to give an example, I'm from Texas in the United States, and we have hurricanes, cyclones that hit and create a lot of water and a lot of flooding. A couple years ago, we had one that hit a very large city, Houston, and it created a lot of flooding. Many people were trapped in their homes, sitting on their roofs, waiting to be rescued because they could not evacuate. Planet was able to provide imagery, just visual imagery, nothing multispectral or just RGB imagery. The responders on the ground conducting rescues were able to see which roads were flooded and where people were so that they could send rescue vehicles as needed to save lives, which was a really, I thought, amazing use of imagery. This example is more recent. This is just, I believe, in March. There was a volcano eruption in Indonesia. And we were able to provide imagery, again, not very long after the eruption itself. You can see there's still steam and ash cloud coming out. There's still lava flow. And this data is used to, for example, determine how to safely evacuate people who would otherwise be in the path of this eruption. Another URL here at the bottom, you can go see all of the recent disaster data set releases. It's all Creative Commons licensed, so the people on the ground are given it directly, but then you, if you have any interest yourself in taking the data, seeing it, can also go grab it. And this is, I think, a fun example that's probably relevant to a lot of us here. The data from those tiny dove satellites can also be used, not just on its own, but to augment efforts from other organizations. So how many people here have mapped for Humanitarian OpenStreetMap team? Hot. Yeah, nice little cluster here. So Humanitarian OpenStreetMap team, one of the main thing they do is, again, disaster response. I was talking about disaster response. This example is from March after a cyclone in Mozambique. And the red data here, the red lines, is automatically detected roads from Planet Analytics. So basically, deep learning used to detect roads in Dove data. The white lines is the OpenStreetMap existing roads in this area. So what we were able to do is working with HOT, with this automatically detected road data, and with the observations of this particular city after the cyclone hit, help HOT triage the order of crowd mapping operations to say there's a lot of new roads here, this place was strongly affected, let's map this area as quickly as possible. So we were able to take our data, take that fire hose that we create, and work with a community organization like HOT to respond to crisis. When I was in college, like I said, too many years ago, nobody was talking about the possibility of a daily Earth observation data set. We just didn't think about it. So there was all kinds of science that simply wasn't possible back then. And one of the things I love doing in my job today is seeing what people are doing who are in college today with research. So this is just a great example of using still imagery from the Dove satellites to measure river velocity at in Arctic rivers. So remember I told you that we're taking imagery every 24 hours, right? How are we measuring velocity of a river that moves a lot faster than, you know, 24-hour scale? Anybody have an idea? We're not taking video. So at very, very northern latitudes, the paths of these orbits of these satellites overlap just enough that there's about a 90-second gap between one overlap and then the next flying dove over the same area. So these students discovered this and were able to basically take pairs of imagery for their river locations that have 90-second gaps in between them and then use that to measure velocity of river flow during the ice breakup, which is just a really neat use of data that otherwise is created every 24 hours that I would never have even known people do. Speeding forward, fighting climate change. This is one of the most significant uses of this data on a large scale, I think. And so multispectral imagery by itself, you wouldn't think necessarily that it has much immediate application to climate change science. But they're able to use it and combine it with stuff, for example, like LIDAR data, to get a very accurate measurement of forest carbon emissions. So this is a study that's currently ongoing. You can read about it if you go to this URL. They just started it, I think, late last year, and then they just published, literally, I think, a week or two ago, that their hypothesis actually is working. They are actually able to get very accurate measurements by combining LIDAR data of tree canopy height with imagery of the forest, multispectral imagery of the forest itself with vegetation indices. And so this is really cool. As far as I'm aware, it's still ongoing, so the results have not been fully published yet, but you can go read about it and follow along with it just like me. And then finally, working to preserve natural resources. Like I said, I just want to tell you quickly about this last example before I close. Anybody heard of the Allen Coral Atlas Project? Whoa! I was about to say probably not. Nobody's heard of it. That's awesome. That makes me excited. For the rest of you, the Allen Coral Atlas Project is a project to map every single coral reef in the world on the surface of the planet, which has never been done before. And if you're not aware, coral reefs are disappearing at an incredibly fast rate. And because they've never been mapped, we're not able to quantify very well the rate of where they're disappearing and which ones might be affected more than others. So this project is using planet data to map the coral reefs and then combining it with like bathymetric, topometric data, being able to determine the change over time in the coral reefs themselves, which is great. But it's also really fun if you go to ellencoralatlas.org to browse all of this atlas, because you can view it in your web browser and zoom in and see every single coral reef, which is neat. Well, not every single one. They're still in progress of being mapped, but you can see the ones that have been mapped already. So in closing, I want to show you another picture that changed the world. This time it was 1968. Apollo 8 was the mission that took this now famous image, which was the first time that humans had seen the big blue marble. This picture is in every single textbook. It's used in movies. It's on magazine covers. It's everywhere. We've all seen it. It's not that big a deal to us. But at the time it was taken, this was the first time most people had seen this kind of image of our planet. And it changed so many public conversations. It changed how every common person saw our planet. Everyone was talking about this image. It changed the world. And the astronaut who took the image says that on Apollo 8 mission, they set out to explore the moon, but instead they discovered the Earth. So now it's 2019, and we have a data set that has over 800 pictures of every single location on Earth in an archive that's growing every day. So I want us to think, what kind of change can we, Earthlings living on the planet Earth, affect with that kind of information about ourselves? If one picture of the Earth could change the world, what can 800 or more pictures of the Earth do? Because remember, you can't fix what you can't see. Thank you all. Do you want to take questions or not?
Okay. Yeah. Some question.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sarah, for this really inspirational talk. If there is any question, we have time just for one. Ningú? Nadie? Una pregunta? Just a quick question. So I mean, maybe it's on the mind of the people also this question. What about the cost of these images related with other images, this coming from micro satellites? I mean, there are...
The cost, like monetary cost?
Yes.
What are you asking? How much they cost specifically?
Yes, I mean, if I want to use that for all this application...
Good question.
I am a researcher, or maybe coming from the
That's
enterprise.
A wonderful question. Okay, I don't have the answer to commercial enterprise licensing. I don't know because I'm not a salesperson. However, I work with researchers and education people And if you work at a university, whether you're a student, a professor, a faculty, and you want access to the data, we have a program where you can get free access to it for non-commercial purposes. So if this applies to you, email me and I'll send you the link. Like that science story I was showing with the river ice, uh-huh. We have researchers doing all kinds of interesting stuff. And you can get a non-commercial license for 10,000 square kilometers per month.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
¿Alguna pregunta? No? Thank you.
Okay.
Sarah.
Thank you.